A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, we speak to Don McGuire, the Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Qualcomm. Qualcomm is enabling a world where everyone and everything can be intelligently connected. A global leader in technologies, Qualcomm generates over $40 billion in annual revenue and happens to be growing at over 40% year over year. Their technologies span handsets, 5G and other communication technologies, automotive and connected car, and Internet of Things. Don is responsible for all things marketing. He leads the global marketing function across all Qualcomm's businesses as the company continues to diversify beyond mobile and into new growth areas. Don and I talk about his view of brand and the relationship between Qualcomm, the corporate brand, and Snapdragon, which is their consumer brand, how he thinks about the business value of brand, and how he incorporates storytelling into the way he communicates his brand message. I hope you enjoy the show.
Don, thank you so much for joining the Next CMO podcast. We're super excited to have you on the show today. Understand you're celebrating your role as a CMO for about a year now. So would love to learn a little bit more about you and what you do for Qualcomm.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting and a privilege to be here with both of you. Yes, as you mentioned, I am celebrating the end of my freshman year. So as a CMO, and I'm also a COVID CMO, as we've been named, those folks who have either ascended or been hired into the role during the pandemic. So it's been an interesting ride in my first year, for sure. So I am the global CMO of Qualcomm, and so I serve as the leader of the marketing organization across all of our businesses, and really in service of the entire company. Really excited to be in the role. It's been a fun first year. No longer getting bullied in the schoolyard because I'm no longer a freshman, but it's been really, really fun so far. And I'm looking forward to, obviously, moving into the next several years in my tenure, because there's a lot to do. A lot of opportunities, a lot of challenges ahead, but it's an exciting time to be a CMO.
It certainly is, Don. And thanks for the intro and happy anniversary. You made it through the first threshold. And you're right that there are some really interesting stories we've heard in the last couple of years about those people who are classic COVID CMOs. And a lot of people are doing this, including being remote and having remote teams and all that. So it's a really interesting time. The interesting thing that you mention is the fact that, well, it's your freshman year, and as you probably know painfully all too well, the average tenure of a CMO is actually less than the average tenure of a college education. So it's hopefully you make it for the 4 years and into grad school and postdoc in your role at Qualcomm, but certainly the role sometimes has a little bit of turbulence. The one thing I wanted to just follow up with you on a little bit, Don, is to help people understand Qualcomm a little bit more, because I think the context is going to be really important for our discussion. And we were chatting before, and we talked about the fact that I was in sort of an overlapping space for a while when I was the CMO of this company, Nuance. You guys are 20 times the size of Nuance. Nuance was about $2 billion at the time. Qualcomm's about $40 billion in annual revenue right now. But some really similar interesting challenges in that a lot of Nuance's business was embedded technology and software, including in some of the spaces that Qualcomm is in, like mobile as well as automotive, but although a slightly different space. And I'd love you to just try to describe at a very high level to our listeners what the Qualcomm's overall business is all about.
Sure. Let me start with the elevator pitch and the bow and the ribbon that wraps around the package that is Qualcomm. And so what I would say is that Qualcomm is our mission, really our aspiration is to enable a world where everyone and everything can be intelligently connected. So that's sort of the broad macro mission of the company. And then, of course, we can unpack that, right, a lot and talk a lot more in detail about what does that really mean. But it's a conversation starter for sure that that we use to define the company at the highest level as far as our mission and our aspiration. So I'll start there. And then we can kind of dive in into, you know, several different topics or areas. If you'd like to, we can talk about brands and the fact that I've got really two main brands that I have to shepherd and nurture and take care of. One is the Qualcomm brand and the other is the Snapdragon brand, and separate audiences for both of those. And I get to play both sides of the B2B and the B2C house in the nurture of these two brands. So that's kind of fun and challenging. But yeah, so we've been in business for 35 years. We started out in the mobile space. That was sort of our DNA. We like to say that we enabled a world where you can actually carry the internet around in your pocket and you can access your life on a device called the smartphone, and really ushered in the mobile revolution, which has been the most disruptive technology leap in mankind's history, probably in the last, you know, 50 to 100 years. So, and we've been at the center of that. So it's really an exciting place to be, an exciting company to call home and to be the CMO of. And like, why don't we get in some details with some of the questions that you have?
Great. And a couple of things, and you brought up a brand, and I think that's a really important one. And obviously, you have an interesting dynamic that you need to support with your brand strategy, because you've got B2B, you've got B2C. And I know you did some serious time at Intel that had some similar kind of opportunities. So talk about how you think about the overall brand hierarchy and what your role is as the CMO in sort of defining that brand strategy and connecting it to the overall company strategy.
Sure. Why don't we start out with Qualcomm? It's obviously the name of our company, and it is our master brand. And what we've been doing to successfully build architecture around, I'll call it our branded house, is that we've looked at Qualcomm, which again is the name of the company, and how we tell our story to certain audiences like investors or policymakers or ecosystems and customers. And businesses and enterprises. And then we also have this brand that has been developing over the years called Snapdragon. And Snapdragon really is a brand that's closer to the devices and experiences that consumers, you know, have in their lives every day. So about 6 months before I ascended into the role of CMO, we started looking at these brands and really forging ahead with an architecture that would drive success from a storytelling perspective and also from a brand value perspective for each of them separately, as well as how they would work together. And prior to me becoming the CMO, the two brands were sort of stacked on top of each other. And it made it difficult for not only the collective story to be told about how the brands interrelate to each other, but also the distinctive and separate stories for each brand and the product categories that they relate to, the audiences that they have to appeal to, and, you know, building brand value for each of them. So we decided to separate them and give them each their own white space to operate in that's fully aligned from an architecture perspective with audience at the core of how we build the brand architecture for each, both Qualcomm and Snapdragon. So that's how I entered into this new role with a sort of a clean sheet of paper on how I approach brand and how my team and the company approaches brand as it relates to Qualcomm, our master brand, as it relates to Snapdragon, which is our global product brand. And if you want, if you'd like, we could dive into each one of those a little bit separately, but I wanted to sort of pause there and see if you have any kind of follow-up.
No, that's great, Don. It's a great intro. And I do have a couple of follow-up questions there. And first of all, they're two amazing brands. And I love the fact that you, as you said, created some white space for them. Snapdragon is amazing on a bunch of different levels. And so one of the things that I think would be interesting for our listeners is to understand how you activate these things in the world. So starting at that level with these two really important brands, you've got obviously a broad set of audiences and in a go-to-market, which is largely about getting giant design wins, I suspect, is what you do. So what role does brand play in your overall marketing plan? And does it vary as you go from Snapdragon to Qualcomm and back?
Great question. Actually, multi-part question, but great questions nonetheless. A Qualcomm No, but it's great. It's fantastic. We are here to just riff and have fun. So one of the things I would say regarding Qualcomm specifically is, and actually I would say this applies to Snapdragon as well, is I've always been, and we tend to be very audience-led. And to be honest with you, from a company perspective, brand hasn't always been important to the company. The realization of the value of brand and how brand can help drive business value has not been something historically at this company that has been top of mind, nor seen as a value driver. And that comes from a long history of being a very engineering-driven company, a very technology development-driven company. And it's not unusual in tech, to be honest with you, but if there's tech and then there's tech within the tech, I believe that historically Qualcomm has sort of been the tech within the tech. And so it was even deeply more rooted in, hey, just build amazing technology that changes the world and, you know, they will come. And so all these other things that typically would be important to other companies as they build out their business models, like brand or marketing in general, or even sales actually in general, historically weren't viewed as important because the company believed that investing a large amount of money in research and development, building amazing technology, collecting thousands of amazing inventors and allowing them to invent amazing things that then find itself or technologies and things that find themselves into amazing products that really are, you know, business model changing, society changing, personal life changing, that was enough. And that works when you have no competition, right? That works when the environment is sort of a sole source environment. And, you know, once upon a time, way before my time here, that probably was the case for this organization because we invested so far ahead of the curve historically into technology development that the world didn't even realize it needed yet. And so I think that was okay. But no longer in the world that we live in where technology adoption curves have accelerated over the past several years and quite frankly over the past 18 to 24 months even faster, no longer can you just make great stuff and feel like or think that, you know, it will sell or that people will want it without telling your story. And so one of the things that we injected into the DNA of this company as sort of a booster shot, so to speak, has been storytelling. We have to tell our story. Because if we don't tell our story, then it's really hard for people to understand who we are and what we do. It's really hard for people to understand our products and our value propositions. And it also allows for, you know, not so nice forces to try to tell a story about who we are and what we do and maybe not such a positive light and really put out misinformation in the I would say, decade of misinformation that we're living in, or maybe it's been beyond a decade. Everybody's susceptible to misinformation. And we as a company were very susceptible at one time to a bunch of misinformation about who we are, what we do, and the value that we bring. So we've injected a prioritization of storytelling and brand building into the DNA of the company, which has been great for me as a CMO, obviously. You want to come into that environment and you want to be able to build on that environment. So what we've done is we've basically elevated market through prioritization and visibility and exposure within the organization and set marketing on a course and on a path to really add value to the business from an overall perspective and contribute to the success of the business through driving impact, both at a brand value level, but also as a sales enablement, at the sales enablement level, at the digital customer journey level, and at the channel level. So it's really been a full kind of funnel exercise. And again, it's probably 5 to 6 years old in the company's history. So it's still, you know, relatively speaking, new, but we're on a great trajectory. And I'm looking forward to kind of taking it from where we started to where we're headed in the future. So for me, that's exciting. And that's kind of a little bit of the background and history. Maybe that was a little long-winded, but that's sort of the background to where we got to today. And then if you take the second part of your question, which is, you know, why is it important from a Qualcomm perspective and a Snapdragon perspective? It's really about being audience-led and making sure on the Qualcomm side that, you know, investors know who we are and where we're headed for the next decade, right? We're a company that built amazing mobile technology and created the smartphone revolution for all extensive purposes. But now that technology and that roadmap that we've built is being applied and adopted by so many different product categories and industries that our growth opportunity, which is about $700 billion in increased TAM over the next 10 years, is an exciting proposition for investors. Another audience is policymakers. The technology that we invent, that we create, that our amazing engineers and inventors create is societal changing. It is doing things to bridge big social and economic and societal issues like the digital divide, like connectivity for all, right? Accessibility, equity in people's ability to learn and educate themselves. So those types of things are important messages to deliver to policymakers. And that the intellectual property that our inventors create, it's important from a national security perspective to the U.S. and et cetera. So those types of things, those types of messages are really important in that storytelling for Qualcomm across those different audiences, you know, those are a couple of examples, right, that for the Qualcomm side of the house. And then the Snapdragon side of the house, it's really about how our Snapdragon platforms enable amazing experiences. We like to say Snapdragon is at the center of extraordinary, which means our little platforms that fit on the tip of your pinky that have trillions of transistors in them really enable these amazing experiences across device portfolios, whether it's smartphones, PCs, XR devices that are kind of pushing into the metaverse, car, right, wearable devices like watches and other things, that little platform, that little art we call our tiny little dragon, enables things like amazing camera experiences, 8K video, true HDR, a billion shades of color, right? Amazing audio experiences through our aptics, you know, HD quality and our Bluetooth technologies and our Snapdragon sound experience platforms, amazing, you know, sort of video capture qualities, and really just amazing connectivity, bandwidth, speed, performance around things like gaming and stuff like that. So it's really about, from Snapdragon perspective, it's positioning Snapdragon at the center of these device experiences that really so many people engage with across passion points, whether it's music, gaming, photography, et cetera, et cetera. So those are two examples of how we look at the two brands differently and how we, from an audience-led perspective, kind of lean in.
Well, that's super helpful, Don, and well illustrated. And I have a couple of follow-up points, and I know Kelsey's been trying to get a word in edgewise, so I will hand the microphone over to her for a second. But a couple of things that really struck me about your response there. One is that it's exciting to see that Qualcomm is thinking strategically. And I mean, you talk about the idea of telling a story, and you think of the story arc that you're telling is rolling out over years or decades. And that takes a lot of patience. And it made me ask, how does Qualcomm think about, and how do you think about, the economic value of the brand work that you're doing?
Great question again. So thank you for teeing it up. We see the importance of brand value a lot differently, I would say, than we used to. I think I kind of addressed that a little bit earlier. But we believe now, and I think the overarching executive team and the C-suite on down believes that driving brand value equates to driving business value. And again, that's sort of a new muscle that the organization has created. But my team and the rest of the organization has done a great job of showing the impact of when we do something to build brand, to nurture brand, right, to advance the storytelling exercises that we have around whether it's Qualcomm or Snapdragon or some sort of combination of the two, that we drive significant impact, whether it's with one or a multitude of our audiences. And we see that translate into real metrics and KPIs, whether it's driving ASPs, in a positive direction, whether it's lowering churn or driving loyalty amongst our customer ecosystems, whether it's influencing the channel or whether it's driving, you know, the investor community to look at us differently in a more positive way, or whether it's driving, you know, policymakers to you know, develop legislation that is supportive of our mission. So all those types of positive reactions, I guess, or actions that are taken from the work that we do are packaged up and delivered in a series of metrics and dashboards to show the organization that brand value and driving brand can really provide business value. And so that's how we've connected the dots for the organization. Again, it's new muscle for the organization, but I will have to say, with Cristiano at the helm as our new CEO, and he and I ascended pretty much nine days apart from each other, he's a real believer. And that's super helpful for me in my role to have a CEO that is a believer and that sees the importance of marketing as a business driver and can relate, right? And so we have to do our job. There's no doubt. We have to deliver the goods. But once we do deliver the goods, to have a general understanding in the C-suite on down to say, you know what? You're right. Marketing is important, right? Brand value can drive business value. I think that's the holy grail.
So Don, I want to elaborate a little bit on the value of marketing and finding that challenge and having a CEO that actually believes in what, you know, marketing is bringing to the table to help accelerate that brand, help accelerate the business. What, and then obviously throw COVID on top of that and all the changes that have occurred in these last 2 years, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that CMOs are facing now these days that they weren't facing prior?
Well, I think the equations probably have changed, you know, addressing the COVID specific piece that you mentioned, that you have to probably look at things differently and how you measure them, because the way that we've all had to adapt and then adopt new ways to engage audience in a world that looked and acted significantly different than it did, right, 24 months prior, was a huge challenge. How do you take in real life experiences and virtualize them and drive either the same or better impact out of those virtualized experiences? And, you know, a simple example of that is when, you know, one of the most physical ways a brand engages with audiences is through, you know, through tangible, you know, face-to-face interaction, or call it events or seminars or speakerships or demonstrations. And all of that went away in an instant. And so, you know, that being part of any sort of multifaceted brand's marketing mix, and to have that piece of the mix just disappear overnight, along with others, by the way, that created a huge quandary and a huge dilemma for CMOs, I'm sure, small and large, right? Enterprises to small businesses. And so having to adapt to that and say, okay, what do we do? How do we still drive value? How do we still accomplish our goals and hit our KPIs when we can't engage with our audiences, our customer, our consumer, whoever that might be, and in a very physical way anymore? And so that was one of, I think, the biggest shifts people had to make. And, you know, there's lots of examples of virtual events and things like that, that people shifted to over time. But I think that was just one example of so many things that we had to reimagine. And for businesses that were not digital by default or mobile first in their thinking, it was a huge struggle. And it continues to be a struggle. And we've seen that across the different layers of business, right? So small business, for example, one of the sectors that was hit most disastrously during the pandemic, because the majority of small businesses were caught operating still in a very analog manner. I'll use that as an analogy, right? And which means their business was done primarily face-to-face. And that didn't work anymore. So how do they survive? How do they continue to do business, to build brand, to address audiences, to deliver their product in a world that doesn't allow them to operate the way that, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90% of how they operated was how they operated. The good news and the interesting thing about Qualcomm is we faced similar challenges, right? How do you go from physical to virtual? How do you take different parts of the marketing mix and change the way that you address or execute on those parts of the marketing mix in a new, different way so that you can still achieve your goals? But on the flip side of that, we also create the technology that can help those businesses transform themselves from analog to digital by default or to mobile first in thinking. And we have the tools, the products, and we have the ecosystem of partners that could really enable transformation and shifts in the way that marketers, CMOs, and businesses in general actually could conduct business in this new environment. So we had sort of two sides of the coin. So we were, I was stressed about it from a CMO's perspective on how do we shift our own and how do we digitally transform ourselves. And then I was excited about the opportunity for us to help others. So it was a really interesting position personally for me as the CMO of Qualcomm to be in understanding and facing the same challenges as others, but also having some solutions that could help, you know, help those folks out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense, and it is a really interesting opportunity that you have done at Qualcomm to really take advantage of some of the visualization capabilities in your core technology, the VR kind of tools that are out there to really showcase the possible around new kinds of interactions that are likely permanent for people, where the reality is post-pandemic, of course, everyone started hiring people from all over the place. So all of a sudden, you don't understand the geographic density of your employee base or your customers the same way, because they're really all over the place. And I think this need for these, you know, immersive, different kind of experiences will continue into the future. And even though Zoom saw a huge ride up in value and then a huge ride down in the crash, I think, you know, some of these technologies and some of the platforms that Qualcomm is enabling, I suspect, have a very, very bright long-term future. One thing I wanted to ask to maybe change the tone a little bit is about marketing at Qualcomm. So what do you think would surprise people from the outside about marketing at Qualcomm? Everyone probably assumes, hey, this is a $40 billion company, probably in most people's perspective, kind of limitless resources. What do you think is surprising that people wouldn't think is the case about the way that the marketing function works or the way you make decisions inside marketing at Qualcomm?
I'm going to answer that question in a couple different ways. First and foremost, I would say this, and this is a shout out to my team. I think I have one of the best teams of tech marketers in the business. But if you look at our size and scale relative to my peer, we are a fraction of the size. So you're right on, hey, we're a $40 billion company plus. We're growing like a weed across so many different industries and sectors. And our opportunities are huge, but my marketing organization is small, comparatively speaking. So we are a mite organization, but resource-wise, I think if people understood that, their expectations, you know, would be like, wow, okay, so, you know, that's not what I expected. I expected you to have a much larger marketing organization. And again, it's coming along. We're growing, and as we grow into new areas, but I think resource-wise, you know, we are efficient and very effective, but we're probably not as, you know, built out as other marketing organizations if you look across my peer set. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is a question I've gotten, quite frankly, a lot from different interviews I've done or podcasts or speakerships in Q&A is, why do you believe that you can make Snapdragon a consumer brand? And why do you think you can build Snapdragon to awareness levels and preference levels and consideration levels with consumers the same way, you know, Samsung does with the Galaxy, or the same way Bose does with their headphones, or the same way Lenovo does with their PCs? So I get that question quite often. So I can unpack that with you guys a little bit as well if you want, but that's something that people like are a little bit like, really? You really think you can do that? And again, from you mentioned my Intel lineage prior in the introduction section, and Intel, you know, did this masterfully for 25 years plus, right? They took the Intel brand and they created relevance for, you know, what was considered at the time an ingredient brand, but something that nevertheless that powered an entire PC ecosystem and really led to the rise of the PC as the center of the digital universe for people at that moment, right, over that period of time. And they did a masterful job of building a full funnel architecture and sort of machine, for lack of a better word, because it was a machine to insert itself into that hearts and minds conversation with consumers, where not only were they walking into a store and saying, I want that Lenovo PC, I want that Dell PC, I want that HP PC, but I want the PC powered by Intel. And that's no small feat. And so fast forward to 2022, the world has changed. The PC has not been the center of people's digital lives for quite a number of years, right? This little device that fits into your pocket has been the center of people's lives. I think we interact with our smartphones on average of 237 times a day.
That's
so it dwarfs the amount of interaction that people ever did with their PCs. And so it's a different world, it's a different time, and it's a different set of circumstances. But I believe the opportunity for Snapdragon is similar to the Intel Inside phenomenon, in that, again, different circumstances, different time, but I believe we have the same opportunity to be an experience-led brand where we can talk about and have a conversation with people who do understand technology, who do care about it and like it, and they want to know what makes this work so well. What makes this camera take amazing pictures that are as good or better than a DSLR? What makes my music experience and the connectivity between my Bluetooth headphones and my phone or my PC, what makes that so good? Why is that happening? And there is a large amount of consumers, I would say a subsection of Gen Pop, who are interested in having that conversation and knowing. And at least to the tune of 5.3 million Snapdragon Insiders, which we've gained in just over a year around the world, they are interested in having that conversation with us and engaging with the brand in a meaningful way. So again, taking that historic, you know, hey, it's been done before, right? So there's a proof point out there, but applying some of the principles in a different way and then coming up and then thinking about all the newness that's ahead of us and in different ways we can actually make or build brand for Snapdragon and make people care because of the different technology platforms we have available to us now. I think the opportunity is really there for us to drive our objectives and to build Snapdragon into a global consumer brand within the audiences that we care about, right? It's not the same audience as Coca-Cola has, for sure, obviously. But there is a subset of Gen Pop, a tech influencer audience, that is a meaningful, influential audience that we think and we have seen so far, and we have the proof points to show that we can build brand relevance, preference, consideration, and awareness for Snapdragon around the world.
Well, it's really interesting, Don, that there's a parallel life experience that I had when I was at my last company. And the funniest part is that we had a consumer brand. I was, as well as being the CMO, I was the GM of this part of the company. And the product was called Dragon, ironically. Dragon, naturally speaking, it was the voice recognition software people bought for their computers so they could turn type into text. And for years, we'd acquired the brand in a sort of an asset sale out of bankruptcy in around 2000, and sort of let it sit in the side and atrophy away. And I had the opportunity to kind of rejuvenate the brand. And what I found, and I'm not sure if you see the same thing, is that by investing in a consumer recognizable brand that had, you know, a really positive kind of experience for consumers, it's a rising tide in a really interesting way, and it starts to influence all of your other audiences because all of your audiences happen to be consumers too.
Sure.
So if it helps with your investor relations because they say, I know what Qualcomm does. They make the Snapdragon thing that, you know, makes my video snappy on my phone or employees. And it's great for employee retention because employees get really excited when they see something that's a tangible representation of what the company does in a consumer setting. And all of those things. So I'm not sure if you saw the same kind of benefit that's maybe a little less direct, but I think it equally is meaningful by elevating the consumer-focused brand.
Absolutely. And you know, it's not just about us doing this on our own. I mean, there is a layer of kind of Snapdragon-owned, right, marketing where we have to tell our story kind of on its own and have clear air for it. But it really, in order to achieve the goals that we have for it, we have a whole ecosystem of partners. We probably have more partners than most companies have across various product categories. And these are really big, really well thought of premium brands across various product categories. Partner marketing is a huge part of how we're going to achieve our goals. Partnering with our amazing partners that utilize our platforms to make their devices and their experiences so compelling. premium, right? And delivering on their value proposition to their audiences is part of the storytelling that we've incorporated for Snapdragon. And then tying it back, you're right. I mean, if investors or policymakers know that Qualcomm makes this amazing little platform called Snapdragon, and it makes my headphones that much better, and it makes my smartphone that much smarter, and it makes my PC more mobile, right? And it makes my car basically a smartphone on wheels, then that association, right, drives that relevance and the goodness. So we look at, you know, yes, they are separate brands, but we do look at that association, that brand association, where it makes sense and to tie the two together. But on its own, like you experienced when you revived your Dragon and started exploring that, we have seen connection. We've seen strong engagement. I think our engagement metrics with our community are way beyond, you know, norms and averages for if you're looking at community metrics for other brands who have formed, you know, fan communities throughout social media and different platforms. So we're seeing strong and you know, obviously you have to nurture and you have to have a good strategy in place, but we are moving the needle significantly, and partners are helping us. And I have always been an inclusive marketer, and I know historically, you know, there's been sort of an exclusiveness mindset in some marketers' minds to say, well, it's my brand. I have to protect my brand. And so therefore, my brand can't interact with any other brands because it quote unquote, will take away from my story. It will dilute my brand. And I think that's really sort of false thinking or maybe just not modern thinking, because brand goodness by association can be almost as powerful as brand goodness, you know, on its own. And if you get an ecosystem of brands together and you tell a broader story, that can be almost as powerful. And so the way I've approached, again, Snapdragon brand building with partners is how can my story help amplify and build your story? So I'm not trying to take away from their goodness or not trying to take away from their value proposition or bogart it in any way. I'm trying to help. Right, especially in these new categories where these brands that are in adopting and incorporating technology into their core value proposition as a brand, which they've never done before, and they're not a technology brand by nature, I bring them credibility. Right, look at Louis Vuitton. Look at all these brands that are fashion brands or sports brands or even car brands that technology is becoming more and more a part of their story. I bring credibility. I bring proof points to their storytelling. So if people embrace that and believe me, the conversations, the dialogue, the partnerships, the relationships I've built with CMOs across some of the brands I just mentioned to you, that is the way, you know, our dialogue goes. And so if we can build that association and that cooperation and collaboration, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. And that's another way we approach. If you look at the Snapdragon architecture, brand building architecture as a multi-layered architecture, one of the biggest layers to that is how we storytell cooperatively with our partners, whether it's partners that directly use our platforms to power their products, or whether it's partners that are ecosystem partners, you know, like a Verizon, for example, who doesn't necessarily buy our products to put into their products, but our products enable products that ride on their network, right? And so there's lots of opportunities. And again, you know, I've always been a positive glasses half full kind of person, but the response and the cooperation and collaboration I've seen across our partner ecosystem has been amazing. And I'm just so proud to have these relationships with these really intelligent and smart marketers across a very, very broad set of partnerships that crosses brand categories and product categories. Again, like, it's kind of unrivaled if you look at the different brand partnerships that we can forge across different product categories.
Yeah, I can see that there's really great mutual self-interest there in that, like you said, you have the allure of sort of a special sauce that you're delivering to the brand partners. And the benefit of Qualcomm, of course, is that brand and Snapdragon is everywhere. And it is the persistent brand that's behind some of the most innovative products, which is very cool. Well, believe it or not, we are at the end of our time, and I have to let Kelsey get one more quick question in edgewise, because we ask this every single time. So I'll let Kelsey take it away.
Don, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear, obviously, this question from you of what advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one someday, given your position at a such a large company.
Absolutely. Any words of wisdom I can, you know, put out there into the universe, I'm happy to do. I would say, and you know, obviously take it for what it's worth, but you know, we're dealing in uncharted waters in a lot of ways as CMOs and as marketers. You mentioned the 10-year thing earlier in our discussion, and you know, that's a statistic that's thrown around a lot. I think if you unpack that a little bit, I think there's some reasons for that you know, might not necessarily equate to the stat itself. And I think it will change. I think stability and longevity are two things that can't be, you know, dismissed or ignored, especially as you're trying to kind of chart these waters. But we're dealing with all these different macro forces, right? We're dealing with coming out of a pandemic. We're dealing with a macroeconomic environment that's uncertain. We're dealing with war, right, on a major continent in the world that we haven't seen since, you know, the 40s necessarily. And so there's lots of issues that we all face. The one thing that I always find that's really important is you have to focus on and leading your team through all of these macro issues and these uncharted waters and coming out of a pandemic. And you mentioned, you know, being remote and not having the same opportunities for physical interactions anymore that we did pre-pandemic. All of these factors requires a change in leadership. And you have to look at the way you lead differently than you did 24 months ago. You have to have more empathy. You have to have more patience. You have to, you know, pull creativity out of people and enable an environment where it's okay to make mistakes. And there's just some disciplines and behavioral sort of factors that you have to consider that you maybe didn't have to consider 24 months ago. Command and control doesn't work anymore. It's a generational thing that's shifted. It's a situational thing that's shifted. And so I said, you know, it makes our jobs a lot more difficult, but I think it makes our jobs a lot more human. And I think humane rather. And so I think if we can take a step back and look at the environment that we're operating in and realize that if we're going to achieve our goals, that we have to take care of our people and understand our people's motivations, understand how they can best be productive and forge a new path that gets you to the same end goal, right? Which is got to deliver for the business, right? Got to drive that value, got to drive that impact. But you now might have to do it in a different way. And you might have to, you know, deploy strategies, look at different factors, and really sort of create a new environment for people to operate in that you maybe didn't have to think about in the past. So I think that's one thing that I would say for all marketers and aspiring and or new and or current CMOs that, you know, and I'm sure they're realizing it, they're experiencing it, they're seeing it. And so it's probably not new news to folks. And then the one thing I would leave everybody with, because this is something someone sat me down and taught me really early in my career, one of my mentors, and she said, the how you do something is as important as the what you do. And I've always been a results-driven person. So sometimes focusing on that result, you know, sort of all other things be damned, and leaving carnage in its path is not necessarily, you might get to the result, but it might not necessarily be the holistic result that you're looking for. So focus on the how as well as the what. Change your game up in this new environment, and I think you can drive success.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Don. It was a pleasure to have you on the show. Make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Pod Forte Podcast.